Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and for 30 years, I have been both the CEO of Technology Partners and the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. I am thrilled to have Matt Nichols on the show today. Matt is the Chief Digital Innovation Officer at Technology Partners. Well, Matt Nichols, welcome to the Something Extra podcast. I have been looking so forward to this time with you, and I cannot wait to introduce our listeners to you. Many of them probably know you, but maybe there's one or two that don't, and I'm just excited to share your journey and share your story with our listeners.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here for sure. I'm very excited to be a part of it. And why did it take so long?
I don't know. I don't know, but we're making it happen now.
We're making it happen. Yeah. I know you've mentioned it to me over the years and just, I don't know.
I've mentioned it to you many times. I was not going to say that, but yes, yeah. I said you need to come on to the podcast. So
yeah, well, I'm glad we're making it happen. This is great.
Yes. I feel like the first thing that I need to clear up for our listeners, Matt, you know what I'm going to say?
Last name?
Matt, yes. Matt's last name is N-I-C-O-L-L-S. Mm-hmm. So we are not related. In fact, we've gotten some funny looks in the past, haven't we? Mm-hmm. Matt, when we've been in meetings with each other and they're like, wait a minute, is that Lisa's husband?
Or yeah. What kind of nepotism is going on here, right?
A little nepotism, right?
Yeah. I always say you guys spell your name the wrong way, right? With the H in it.
So, I know. Yeah. You have told me that before. You have told me that before too. But, you know, I have often said this, Matt, and I mean it. I would claim you as my little brother any day of the week. So there you go. So
right back at you. We've been doing this together a long time.
27 years, Matt.
Wow.
27 years we have known each other. It's really crazy. You started working for TPE, Technology Partners, in 1998 as a consultant. Mm-hmm. So really, you and your precious family, Cheryl and Ellen and Lauren, you guys are family to us.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Which makes it a lot of fun, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, we've got a lot to talk about today. I mean, scores and scores and scores of questions that I have for you. But here's where I'd love to start. You started your college journey pursuing a fine arts degree. Matt, where did that love for art stem from?
You know, I grew up in a family of engineers and artists. And I never really made that connection until I started thinking about and preparing for being on this podcast. But a family of musicians, my mom was an oil painter, my dad was an engineer, my brother's an engineer, as you know. And I've just always loved art. I spent a lot of time doodling in class, connected a lot with my art teachers, didn't do very well in school, but that all came together later.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to become a Disney animator. This is back in the days when they used to hand draw, you know, all the cells and all that. And college was not a thing that we talked about in my family. You know, we didn't really have much in the way of resources. Nobody in my family went to college. And so I kind of muddled my way through that to see if I could make something happen because I knew the path to get to Disney was going to be going through a good art school. And so I moved away for a while, moved up to Indianapolis to try to go to school up there because I had heard that Disney was drafting artists from IU, and took some courses in 3D animation, very early rudimentary stuff before it was even close to mainstream. Did a lot of fine arts classes, figurative classes, drawing naked people a lot, which was an interesting, awkward thing for a 19-year-old, right?
Yes.
And I worked as a caricature artist at the same time. So that was my path.
And do you still doodle today?
In meetings, yeah. It's kind of keeping my right side of my brain occupied so I can pay attention with the left side of my brain, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we're not going to talk about this today, but I will say for our listeners, oh my goodness, I've been in so many meetings. Can't even count how many meetings I've been in with Matt. And very quickly, if there is a whiteboard in the room, Matt will get up and start, you know, drawing the customer journey. I mean, it's really phenomenal. And I think our clients always appreciate that, Matt, because you can visually show them kind of where we're going with a solution or whatnot. So,
yeah. The whiteboard is kind of the epicenter of collaboration for me. And it's something that brings everybody together because the visual, it's something that you can communicate information at a glance. Mm-hmm. Right, not having to process words, read narrative, look at a spreadsheet. Right, if you can visualize it, people can understand it instantly, and so
absolutely.
It's a critical tool. Our walls are covered with whiteboards. I've got the, you remember the 64-pack crayons when you were a kid that had the sharpener?
Oh,
on the
sure.
Back?
Yeah.
I've got that equivalent of whiteboard markers. So we've got every color you can imagine.
You do indeed, Matt. In their offices has glass everywhere, and everywhere you look, there's wireframes and all sorts of things written on the glass. Well, that passion for art, Matt, evolved into a passion for software and technology and to what you're doing today, which we're going to spend the majority of our time on today. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited to share that with our listeners. But there was a special person who had a lot to do with fueling this passion for you in technology. Can you tell our listeners that story?
Yeah, I'd say definitely. This is this man nobody's ever heard of before. Not really anything noteworthy and no headlines, but he grew up and, you know, I've heard a lot of his stories. And so I would say his childhood sounds almost like Norman Rockwell. In the 40s and 50s, didn't have any money, kind of made the best with what he had. He told stories about going down to the riverbanks and hanging out in the hobo camps. And I'm like thinking about what that'd be like today. And we certainly wouldn't want, you know, our kids hanging out in the homeless parts of town by themselves as, you know, as a child. Mm-hmm. And the relationships he formed with those guys, and that they were a different breed of people, but he never felt, you know, a danger and all that sort of stuff. And, then how he kind of grew up and didn't really have a path forward through college or anything like that. So he joined the military and didn't really know if he had what his purpose in life was going to be. He didn't feel particularly gifted in any way and in any particular calling. But during going through the onboarding into the military, he was picked out by some of the leadership, and he and a couple other people were pulled into a group that they ultimately deployed into like code cracking and ciphers and things of that nature. So I think they recognized a different kind of intelligence in him, and that was really cool. And so he told me these stories about being stationed in Eritrea, which is a country next to Ethiopia in Africa. And they would go to the top of this mountain in this room with these devices. I don't know if they were the Enigma machines or something similar, and intercept messages being sent to Mussolini, who was stationed in Ethiopia, and all the stories he had about being down there and meeting the people and all that. He told a story of, you know, the information that he was getting was compartmentalized so that he didn't know exactly what it was, but somebody did and knew when he had to take it down to the base down on the other side of the mountain. And he'd get it in a Jeep. The information would be in a metal briefcase handcuffed to his wrist, and a couple of, you know, big burly military guys, right, armed to the teeth, would drive him down the mountain. And there were times where those guys had to hop out of the Jeep and mow some people down with machine guns to get him to where he needed to go.
My goodness. Like,
pretty intense stuff. And, you know, so he had that whole phase of his life, came back, got into engineering and controls, kind of became his own self-taught electrical engineer. And from there became a, got into software development. So he started coding on these, you know, he's telling me what these machines are like. They're huge. They've got little tiny screens, 4-inch screens, right? These big clunky keyboards. And he'd code on these things. And he'd say, I'd start the software compiling. I get up and go make a pot of coffee and come back. Like, that's how slow they were. Ultimately wound up building software that did like plan giving calculations. So mm-hmm. they needed all these actuarial calculations to predict when people would die and all that sort of stuff. And worked closely with the IRS to try to figure those things out. And ultimately his software resulted in the IRS having to republish all their manuals. He found this discrepancy and reached out to them, and they tried to reconcile it, couldn't figure out. And ultimately they're like, wow, your software is getting it right and our calculations are wrong. So they had to republish their manuals. I'm like, man, like just did a lot of really interesting things in his life. Comes back, gets involved in doing missions because he wants to go back to Africa, where he felt a real connection with the people down there, and started doing leading mission trips for his church down to Africa, and did that all the way up until his 80s. In fact, he would go to these remote villages where you'd have to canoe and then get out and carry your canoe and then canoe some more, and like really way off the beaten path, mm-hmm. right? And developed relationships with these families, and he would keep going back there and relationships over time. And one of my favorite stories he tells is that there's this baby that was born while he was there, and the family decided to name the baby Jim Nichols, which I think it's funny to think that there's a Jim Nichols running around in an area of Africa that doesn't speak English.
Right.
So
right.
They refer to him as Jim Nichols. So,
and that's Nichols.
That's right. Yeah. That's my dad.
That's your dad. Such an amazing mm-hmm. story. I love it so much. I do. I love it so much. And he really, you know, along with your brother, Michael, but really fueled that passion for technology. And let me ask you this. So Matt, you started working for Technology Partners in 1998 as a consultant. Mm-hmm. Technology Partners is really known in the industry for their transparency, for paying our employees really well. How did this resonate with you when you became a consultant in 1998? How was it different from what other people were doing and experiencing?
Yeah. Well, my brother Michael, as you mentioned, is the reason I'm a software developer now. My dad was an inspiration. I was pursuing art. My dad told me I was probably going to be a starving artist, so get comfortable with that lifestyle in a nice way. And then my brother offered me a job. And so I moved back from Indianapolis, learned what software development even really was, and it went off from there. The next influence my brother had on me was he started at Technology Partners first. And at the time, I was consulting through another firm, and he kind of shared with me the model, this low transparent margin, which would allow me to make significantly more money, allow the clients of Technology Partners to pay less money. And it just was a really open, transparent, great way of doing business that really attracted me. So I applied, and you guys rejected me and said you can't come work for us because you
work. I can't believe that we rejected you.
Yeah. Well, it was on good merit, right? It was like, you work for a client of ours, and you can't poach people from our clients. And so eventually I left that client. I went and worked for another company for 6 months or a year, I can't remember, and reapplied. Mm-hmm. It's hired me.
And then we hired him.
And I've kind of been working with you guys in one way or another ever since.
Yeah. And it has been such a blessing. And just we've seen a lot of change, and we've seen a lot of change. But Matt, some things have not changed.
That's right.
Our model has stayed the same. We will still reject you.
That's right.
If you try to apply and you're at a client. So those principles really have remained true with how we operate as a company. But, you know, when we decided to add the solutions to our portfolio of services about 15 years ago, Matt, mm-hmm. we looked at each other, Greg and I looked at each other, and we basically cherry picked you out of all the consultants that we had worked with. We said, who is the person that could really help us build this? And you truly were one of the smartest consultants we had ever worked with. Well, no, it's true. It is true. I think you're probably a chip off the old block with your dad, because what our listeners may not know is that Matt is part of the Mensa Society. So Matt is incredibly intelligent, really, like I said, one of the smartest that we had worked with. But we also knew that you would bring passion, creativity, and professionalism to the role, Matt. And so that is when we talked to you, and the rest is history, as they say. But today you are the practice director of custom software solutions for the company. And truly, I think we have one of the most incredible team of human beings out there. I tell people all the time, I would put our team up against anyone in the industry.
100%.
Built an amazing, amazing team of technologists. Your team has been really blessed. You've worked with billion-dollar enterprises, designing, building custom solutions that power the backbone of operations. Iconic brands, really iconic brands, Matt, from MasterCard to Panera Bread to, you know, oil pipelines and power grids. I mean, truly, you guys have worked with some of the best teams out there. It has been really a blessing. But I want to get into more about what your team is doing today. And so I've got lots of questions for you. Really, you know, everything in IT, if you're in IT, there's one thing we can all agree on. The change is incredible. The rapid pace by which technology is changing, light speed,
yeah, you know,
AI, cybersecurity, infrastructure, modernization. So let me ask you this. What are you scrambling to get ahead of right now?
You're 100% right about constant change. If you ever have a vision in your mind as a young professional that in IT, you're going to get to the point to where you can just be settled and be in a leadership position and coast, that will never happen. I remember when my dad told me, I brought to him some new technology, and he said, you know, I'm just kind of tired of learning new things. And I'm like, well, you're done then. You're done, bro.
Right.
So you always have to be ready for that change. And, you know, what I'm really excited about, what I'm really focused on, the big change ahead of us, you know, obviously AI is top of the heap. Everybody's figuring out how they can leverage AI the best in a responsible way, right? A safe way, secure way, but really harness that power. I remember the first time I used GPT when it came out. And my first thought was, this is going to change the world more than the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Things are going to be completely different. And but what a lot of people aren't thinking about is the infrastructure that it's going to take to support the demand for AI. The compute needs for AI is it's very, very expensive, and the demand is going through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
So when you think about the data centers that we're going to have to build to support the demand in our country alone, we're going to have to double in the next four and a half years, double that, which is going to be hundreds and hundreds of data centers, which means a lot of construction and cooling. How are we going to cool the data centers? We got to get water there. We got to get power there. We have to manufacture chips. There's a seven trillion dollar investment in this level of infrastructure, trillion with a T. Now we need the companies to be able to step up and do that. We need those infrastructure companies to be able to step up and do that. And so I want to take everything that I've learned and everything that my team's done over the years. And by the way, going back to your comment earlier about good teams,
yes.
If I had $100, I would bet all $100 on my team, because they're so good. They're so good.
So proud best of them. The best.
But I want to take everything we've learned. How can we use digital innovation to support those infrastructure efforts that are going to support the new critical infrastructure? The new critical infrastructure is AI and those data centers, because if those go down, every business in our country will, in one way or another, be
it's going to be affected.
It's going to be affected, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So if you think about the critical infrastructure that's going to support the critical infrastructure, that's where our focus is right now.
Yeah. And I've got a lot more questions around that. And I'm excited to talk about it more. Matt, you have said that nothing compares to the moment we're entering into right now. What do you mean by that?
100%. Yeah. I mean, if you think about the technology arc that's happened since the creation of the wheel, right? Wheel, fast forward to the internet, like long time. The arc between those two bits of technology, I think, may be less than the arc that we're about to experience in the very near future. Because if you think about AI, include robotics, of course.
Yes.
And then quantum computing, you know, and nanobots, like you marry those things together with just some of the things that we've heard about quantum computing just in the last few weeks and month about the computational power and speed. It's going to drastically change the world in ways that I think that we can't even really comprehend right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really excited to be alive in this time and be a part of that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know our good friend Pete Hogan at Campana. Mm-hmm. He loves quantum computing and loves talking about that. Matt, you and Pete should have lunch and talk about all things quantum computing. Well, Matt, I mean, we're hearing that CEOs and boards are looking directly to their CIOs to have the answers for AI. The pressure is to move fast. Mm-hmm. That's a real pressure, but there is also a fear too, because if you move too quickly, you risk making the wrong bet. You go too slow and you're reminded that your predecessor's only a few interviews away. What are you seeing?
Yeah, you know, going back to what we talked about before with this relentless need for education and learning to stay ahead of the curve. CIOs are not, that's nothing new to them. Mm-hmm. You know, in order to be to where they are now, they're used to that, right? So
yes,
I would say just back to the basics, you know, AI and quantum computing, both of those have this nonlinear process to them, right? It's not like a progression of old technology we've seen before. This is new and completely different.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes magic. And so I would say to any CIO, start with education, but not just yourself. Educate those around you. Educate your executive leadership team. Educate your board so that they understand AI. We do these AI workshops with leadership teams, and it's literally sitting down and building an AI, right? Building a custom agent, right? And helping them get their hands on it, really understand what's possible. And it changes the tone from what are you going to do, CIO, to what can we do together?
Now
people are collaborating and they're thinking about it. And they're thinking about how it can apply to their vertical within their organization.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exciting. But yeah, CIOs are faced with this whole ready, fire, aim, right? Everybody has expectations. And how are we leveraging AI? And how can we maximize this potential for competitive edge or to streamline our operations or whatever? And they do. They have to take measured steps there, be very pragmatic. Otherwise, they find themselves in a ditch down the road.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love what you said, Matt, that it's really, you know, empowering your people. I mean, literally AI is going to change the future of work.
Mm-hmm.
And that is whether you are a contracts person, whether you're in HR, whether you're in procurement, it is going to change. So I believe what you said, it's like, how can we do this together?
Mm-hmm.
How can we do this together? And looking for those opportunities in the business to help your people do their job more efficiently.
That's right.
Yeah, I tell you, I heard a speaker from MIT recently, and I absolutely love this quote, and I've hung on to it, Matt, that he's talking about AI. And he said, you know, AI is not going to replace the human being. You're going to continue to need humans. But he said, somebody who's really good at AI a human being that's good at AI may replace the human being who does not know AI.
100%. Yeah. Yeah.
I thought that was such a powerful quote.
I don't know if the first part of that is true, that getting back to, we're not even fully able to comprehend what the possibilities are yet or how far it can go. So I don't know. Maybe someday it can replace humans. We'll see. But right now, humans are the orchestrators of the AI, especially when you're talking about Gen AI and at the desktop level. We've all gotten emails before that we read them and we're like, oh, that was generated. That's a Claude email or that's a GPT email. And then we got to go in and refine our prompts or edit the content so it feels more authentic, right? That's really good for us, which it is at the end of the day. But it's those people that really know how to learn to leverage them and orchestrate them. Mm-hmm. Developers on my team are using different AI tools to generate code in the same way. It's like, well, you have to know how to write it yourself so you can validate that whatever is output by the AI is legit, because a lot of times it is not.
There's still some hallucinating going on.
Yeah, right. And so, you know, still being that orchestration layer of, I need to know what to build.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I need to understand how to get there. And then I can use an AI as a force multiplier, as they say, to speed things up. Let's get that velocity going. Let's get rid of the tedious stuff so we can focus on higher level things. And
I agree.
That's where we are right now.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Well, Matt, I want to get back to something that you talked about in the beginning of our talk, and I want you to really explain this more. You've been talking a lot about this CI for CI, critical infrastructure for critical infrastructure.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit more about what that means, if you could get even a little bit deeper into that, and why does it matter?
The reason it matters is the demand to build these data centers and all the necessary infrastructure to connect them all and pull them together is exceeding our capabilities right now. So we have to figure out a way to optimize these infrastructure companies, the construction companies, cooling, manufacturing, and all of that, to be able to operate more efficiently, to be able to meet that demand. You know, I'm thinking about Todd Finders at Meriton, right? Yes. I know they're providing cooling for data centers, and that's a big part of their business. And he's thinking about, how can I make us more efficient? How can I meet that demand? How can we be there to get that market share? And that's going to be through, digital is going to be a big part of that, right? Mm-hmm. How can we streamline your processes? How can we automate some of those processes, right? How can we ensure growth and scale while ensuring quality? Because that's always a problem, right?
Absolutely.
There's no room for error there, right? And so, that's where we want to really make a big impact. But even taking a step back and looking at a bigger picture outside of just the CI for CI to support AI and the industries that support this growth, every business has their critical infrastructure piece, right?
Exactly. Mission critical.
Yeah. What are those mission critical pieces that have to work, that have to be there? And that's what our focus is. You know, how can we be part of solving your biggest, scariest problems? And get the right people at the table to tackle it and be that critical infrastructure for your critical infrastructure.
Right. Yeah. And you guys have already been so successful in at many, many, and many organizations doing that. And it'd be fun to continue to be a part of that, that conversation. Well, let me ask you this. You've said before, modernization is the new innovation. Explain that. Dig deeper into that, Matt. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, and maybe a better way to say it is modernization is the gateway to innovation, because there's a lot of opportunity out there right now to modernize old tech, and it's a have to. We have to do it. We gotta, you know, this is just old and clunky, or it's out of support, or it's a security issue. We've got to modernize this old tech, and we need to make sure that we're focused on not just lifting and shifting to new technology. We need to take a fresh look at whatever problem that was being solved by that old tech and apply some innovation. And to me, innovation is the creative application of technology to solve a problem. So how can we think about it differently? How can we apply a little creative thought and reimagine what this new solution is going to be? So it's not just a technology lift, but it's a new way of doing it. It's a more innovative, better, more efficient way of doing it to help push your organization forward.
Right. Yeah. Why would you want to just lift and shift? I mean, you do need to, as you said, take a fresh perspective and step back. Yeah. And because there's been so many advances, right, in the technology, you know, probably since that system was even put in place at the beginning, you know, so
right.
Don't just do that. I love that. So yeah. Really,
if you do a technology lift without evaluating for the opportunity of innovation, you've kind of failed, I think.
You've missed it. Yeah. You missed a big opportunity. Well, I'm going to ask you one more question, then we need to take a quick break. And we've talked a lot about AI already, artificial intelligence. It's not a new thing. You know, it's not. No. I mean, it's been around for a long time. But, you know, it's the use cases and the way that we can use it. It's just become so much more accessible, I think. Mm-hmm. Yes, accessible. Yeah. Yes. But, you know, how should CIOs, do you believe, really be thinking about this? And you've already talked about the education piece, but else would you like to say about that, Matt?
Well, I think it's important that, especially at the speed at which AI is moving, because of accessibility, like you mentioned before, that it's not just about learning, right? It's about surrounding yourself with the people who already know. Earlier when you were talking about our team and you said, oh, Matt, you know, we brought you on because you're good at this and whatever, like I quickly learned I needed to have people around me that knew a lot more than I did. So I can prove you wrong right there. but CIOs know this, right? You've got to surround yourself with good people, talented people, because there's a breadth of technology that's under your watch and you can't know it all.
Mm-hmm.
But the fastest way to learn is to bring in people who already know it, right? People that you know, that you trust, that have been there, done that, that you can rely on to be an advisor for you.
Mm-hmm.
Be cautious in moving forward. So cautious optimism with constant learning, I think is key for that.
Yeah.
You don't have to know everything, right? You don't have to know everything, but you have to know enough to hold people accountable so that you know what they're saying rings true and you have faith in it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, not to put a shameless plug in here, Matt, but that's why you need good partners.
Yeah.
That's why you need good technology partners.
That's
true. Yes.
100%.
Yeah. Well, we do need to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Matt Nichols on the Something Extra podcast.
In business, the tendency is to seek out partners who are bigger, faster, stronger. When it comes to IT, you should be looking for smarter, faster, better. That's just what you'll find with the talented technologists at Technology Partners. Our experts develop custom solutions to tackle your most complex challenges, all to simplify your processes in the smartest, most efficient way possible. The time to be swift and nimble starts now. Go to technologypartners.net/solutions and see what's possible.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with Matt Nichols. So, Matt, you've been in this space for almost 3 decades. 3 decades. That's a long time, Matt.
Frightening.
There has been so much that has changed, right? How do you think CIOs, based on what you saw 30 years ago, how are CIOs seen differently in the business now?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. It really has changed quite a bit, as of a shift from focusing on IT in general, not just the CIO, but all the way down to the boots on the ground, right? We're seen as like IT was like a support function for the business, kind of a siloed organization. Many CIOs were reporting to CFOs. They didn't really have a seat at the table. And, you know, IT was an enabler, but it was also a hassle for people. And oh my gosh, my password and this and that. They weren't really speaking the same language. It's really important that you're able to speak the business's language.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be a real challenge. went through the TechLX program, and they had a big focus on marketing, which is really key. In fact, my daughter just graduated from college, and we were down there meeting with some of the other parents. One of the parents I met with was actually a CMO. And for a while in his organization, he stepped in as a CIO, which is an odd leap. Mm-hmm. And we had a great conversation about the importance of being able to communicate your ideas in a way that's in the what's in it for me message, the looking for the true benefit, the so what question that I talk to my teams a lot about, which is if you're trying to communicate an idea to somebody, and at the end of your statement, somebody could ask the question, so what? You haven't gotten to the root of that issue yet. And so I encourage them, just keep asking yourself, so what? So what? So what? Every time you make a statement, because the truth is in there somewhere. And when you get to that, you'll be able to communicate that in a way that a non-technical person will get it. And I think CIOs are learning that, right? They've got seats at the table now, right? Yes. They're being seen as the business. Like the organizations that are kind of the front runners in that space, the CIO is no longer a support silo within the organization to enable IT and enable the business. They are the business.
Mm-hmm.
And I encourage our teams and the teams that we partner with, don't see your software engineers as an example, as a team that's going to build you some software. Those engineers need to be embedded within your business unit.
Absolutely.
Their next paycheck, their bonus should depend on achieving a business objective, not delivering a piece of software. And shifting that perspective is going to make it so you've got real team between your IT and your business. They're all in there working together to get the ball into the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest shift that I've seen. And it's really going to catapult these businesses forward.
Agreed. Yeah. And we say all the time, I mean, we are business people first, Matt. We're not technologists first. We're business people first. We solve challenges. We solve, you know, and look for opportunities.
Yeah.
Right. To drive mm-hmm. business.
The man I was telling you about, the CMO who became the CIO interim. Mm-hmm. His son is going to school for cybersecurity and data science. And I was asking him, well, are you going to do this? He's like, well, I'm not so sure. I'm like, well, you're about to graduate next year. So he said, well, I really want to be in a space where I can work with people, you know, and I enjoy engaging with them, learning about those problems. And I said, buddy, you're in a good spot.
You are
data science. You've got to be able to bridge the gap between the need. What are you really trying to accomplish here? What's the business objective? Mm-hmm. And having the technical chops to go understand the data and the technology behind it to make that happen, you're going to be a star in that space. Where there's going to be a lot of people in that space that don't have the interpersonal communication skills and the soft mm-hmm. skills that you have and your ability to understand business. And that's going to set you apart.
Oh, no doubt about that. Well, Matt, you talk to CIOs every day. What do you, and I'm sure that there are CIOs that because of this rapid change that we're seeing, that they feel behind or they feel overwhelmed. There's more to do on their plate than they feel like they have the time for. What kind of advice would you have for them?
You know, I'd say if you're feeling overwhelmed, a lot of times it's because probably 100% of the time, it's because you've got a technical challenge in front of you or a business challenge in front of you that you don't know how to solve or you don't have the expertise for. And there's an interesting balance there. And it's not just CIOs, it's across the board. You've got, you know, IT directors, engineers that have worked for a company for 10, 15 years, right? The great thing is they have deep domain knowledge, which is irreplaceable. It's very difficult to get specific domain knowledge, but it's at the expense of missing out on technology exposure,
mm-hmm.
right? I feel super blessed to be working with so many different organizations in different industries because it gives me and my team a lot of exposure to different technologies, different approaches to applying that technology in creative ways. So you need to balance having, you know, having your teams that have been there for a long time and you trust them and they've got that domain knowledge with bringing in fresh perspective and being open to doing things differently and being open to thinking differently.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't take long for your team to elevate and learn that new technology. If somebody's been brought in that understands that technology, it can help elevate them quickly, right? And you don't want to lose them. You want to keep them fresh. You want those committed team members. They're irreplaceable. But that's a good place to bring in partners or being open to hiring people with more modern skill sets and things like that. And that goes from boots on the ground all the way up to the CIO.
Sure. You know, Matt, as you were talking, it just reminded me, we've been really blessed many times, haven't we, to walk alongside teams where where our people and their people are co-located together and co-laboring together for a solution, right? And as you said, that really can help elevate a team that has that deep domain knowledge, but maybe needs a little bit fresh perspective on what's possible with technology. So it just reminded me of that. Well, Matt, you've worked across lots of sectors from food service to energy to logistics. How do you tailor your approach to innovation when the definition of mission critical looks so different across these industries?
What you learn in working across these different industries is they have a lot more in common than they think or realize. And when we're working with a new partner and they're like, do you have experience in this domain or this tech stack or whatever? I think that it's best for them to open their mind a little bit and stop looking for, we need somebody with deep industry domain. Look for experiences outside of your domain to come bring a fresh perspective. Right. Yes. And so the way that we compose our teams are we have our solution engineers. They're the innovators, right? They're the ones who understand the technology. They've got the business brain. They've got the creative side, right? They have the ability to show the art of the possible, to come in and understand the need and show the art of the possible. We've got our app devs and delivery leads that help get the ball into the end zone and deliver. We've got UI UX that brings that human-centered engineering, that functional design to the table, which is mission critical. And then we have domain specialists, right? Oh, we need to integrate with this ERP. Well, we'll bring somebody with that specific knowledge into the team to help us navigate those waters. But the team would be upside down if we said, well, that should be the primary focus, is integrating with the ERP. Really what you want is you want the solution-minded team that comes to the table and augment that with the specialist in that domain or the specialist in that technology stack.
Right. Very good. Well, let's go back to CI for CI, critical infrastructure for critical infrastructure. You've said a couple times now that this is your mission. Can you give us an example of how this really shows up in practice? What does it look like to build a technology behind the technology? And maybe you've got some examples that you can share with our listeners.
Yeah, for sure. So you had mentioned earlier partnering with these organizations to help advance their mission. You know, a lot of times they've got the teams, they've got the talent, they've got the technical, some of the technical exposure. Maybe they haven't done it yet. Let's say they want to move. They were trying to move to the cloud, right? In a more sophisticated way or a more, a deeper investment into that stack. And they've got some experience with it. Well, it's not that they can't do it. It's that they like to have someone come alongside of them that can help navigate around the pitfalls and potholes and show them where all the skeletons are buried and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
It's not that they can't move forward. It's that they want to be able to move forward with confidence. And so with all the ever-evolving landscape of technology, we'd like to be able to come in and bring our experience to the table to help those companies advance with confidence.
Yeah, that's the key.
Mm-hmm.
Advance with confidence.
Bringing in some perspectives from other organizations that we've worked with, right? How did we solve that? That's happened so many times when we've been doing a discovery assessment or workshop and we're kind of collaborating and whiteboarding with a team, and Jason and I will look at each other, or Brian and I will make a connection, be like, this is just like what we did for
fill in the blank, right?
But we could totally lateral this over here and apply it in this way. And it's been such a benefit to have the experience in having all those different, those different solutions to provide. And it really brings a lot to the table. So we're hopeful that we can bring some of that and really make a meaningful difference. We're very business objective oriented. We're very ROI oriented. So when we look at doing projects, we want to lead with that. We want to lead with, does it make sense to do this at all? And why? Like, what's the real reason we're doing this from a business perspective? And so if we can look at an organization like Black & Veatch, Mike Adams is doing a phenomenal work out there. And just being in the room with a guy for an hour, you're like, man, get ready, because he's moving forward 100 miles an hour, right?
Right.
He's changing the world, and they're building data centers, and they're solving all kinds of cybersecurity problems and infrastructure problems. And if there's anything that we can do to take a fresh perspective or a fresh look at that and bring some fresh perspective to the table and help supercharge their team in any way, I want to be a part of that. Mm-hmm. I want to be a part of that, because if we can help ensure that we're able to lay the groundwork with this $7 trillion investment that these companies are making and governments are making in our country, I want to make sure it's successful.
Mm-hmm. Talk about velocity, right, Matt? Mm-hmm. With Mike, and I know you really highly, highly respect him and what he's doing at Black & Veatch right now.
Yeah.
Well, I have a few more questions here for you, and then we'll get into something extra. But you've referenced the AI agent infrastructure, composable platform, scalable frameworks. These aren't one-off tools; they're systems of innovation. What does that shift look like when it's done right, Matt?
Well, I think some of the things that we're helping partners with is kind of destructuring their legacy architecture into more composable parts and pieces that can be orchestrated, right? So we have legacy systems. A lot of them are monolith systems. And I always say, if we're gonna upgrade this legacy tech, or we've got to break apart this monolith, I always equate it to, how do we change the oil in the truck while we're driving it? Right. And there's some great technology out there and architectural patterns you can follow to decouple all these parts and pieces. And once you get to that place, it allows you to say, okay, all these parts and pieces are decoupled, they're integrated, but they're not tightly coupled. So we could potentially swap out this one piece, modernize just that one piece without affecting the downstream systems. And we've got a number of case studies around doing that very thing, where we've got, for Ameren, they've had 72 applications of varying degrees of legacy technology, from something modern all the way back to VB3 or AS400 or whatever. And they're all tightly coupled to this Oracle database. And they want to move something to the cloud. How do you do that? You can't plan to flip the switch and have a D-Day moment 3 years from now and hope that everything works. Mm-hmm. You first have to take a fresh look at that architecture, decouple all of those parts and pieces, so you can move forward in a more measured, pragmatic way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really wise. Really wise. Matt, you talk about the customer of my customer a lot. What does that mean to you? And how does it change the way that CIOs should be building? Customer of my customer.
Customer of my customer. We say that all the time. And that is, at the end of the day, if IT's building something for a business unit, or it's customer and customer facing, it's like, that's where your focus needs to be. Because if I'm going to help you, I'm going to help you help the person you're trying to help. Does that make sense? I don't know if that's... But at the end of the day, that's where the rubber hits the road. That's where we want to streamline and optimize. If you're looking for something internal, if you're customer facing, how can you improve that customer journey and customer experience? And if you're thinking about your customer's customer, you're always going to be in alignment with your customer.
Yeah, that is so true, because that's who they're serving.
That's right.
I mean, Matt, it just reminds me, because our tagline is improving the world, you know, harnessing the power of technology to improve the world. And what we mean by that, truly, I'm even thinking mission wise, we want our customer's mission to become our customer or our mission, right? Mm-hmm. And their mission, they've got customers themselves. So,
right.
I mean, it really, there is a, what I want to say, a common thread there, that truly, I mean, I've always thought, you know, Bayer's mission is to feed the world.
Mm.
Well, every time we help Bayer with something, that's our mission too.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
And yeah, customers are their farmers, but their customer's customer, it's us.
Absolutely. Yeah. And if that doesn't get somebody excited, yeah, that'll get you up in the morning when you, when you think of it that way. So,
yeah, I'd say another part of that too, is like really getting to know your customer's customer. You know, we spend a lot of time shadowing people, really understand what they do every day to really get it.
Mm-hmm.
My grandma used to say, if you don't have time to do it right, what makes you think you have time to do it again?
That's, I mean, a wise grandma.
How many times have you heard a company does, invests in a new system or a modernize the technology, and it gets into the end user hands and they're like, what is this? What we can't use this, or it doesn't really meet the need. So you really need to start with an empathetic approach of really, truly understanding, putting yourself in their shoes. It saves so much time. You know, just get down there with the end users and figure out what they really actually need.
Mm-hmm.
Bring some of your experiences to the table and maybe show them what's possible.
Yeah.
I love starting a sentence, and I did it earlier today talking to a partner, and said, wouldn't it be cool if, and then fill in the blank. Wouldn't it be cool if we could automatically, and then having them say, oh my gosh, yeah, that would be awesome, right? Because now you know you're onto something. You've shown them the art of the possible. You got them excited about how their life could improve, how their business could improve, how their customers' experience could improve. And it's very exciting to be in that type of a collaboration.
Oh, for sure. You know, and Matt, I'm just thinking, I'm going back to the conversation that you had with that young man this weekend at Ellen's graduation.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, is communication important? Is that an important skill for a technologist to have?
Yeah, it's critical. And many engineers really don't, you know, a lot of engineers on my team don't, you know, they're introverted and they're quiet, they're geniuses, right? And that's okay. It's we need that too.
Yes.
So not every technologist has to be, you know, up in front of the room, waving their hands and drawing on whiteboards and all that. But that has to be, that's an important component of your team that has to be represented.
Such an important component. Yeah. And I know, you know, our Tech LX can have, you know, help with that, but the communication, when I say communication, I'm not just talking about the speaking part. I'm talking about the listening.
Yeah.
And listening is probably more critical, right? Seek to understand first, you know, to borrow a line from Covey. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, IT is a complex beast. Even for those who've been in it their whole lives almost, Matt, speaking, you know, you've done this almost your whole career. But how can a CIO best communicate and educate the executive leadership team and board to understand and support the mission?
Yeah, I think that starts with empathy first, right? Understanding where they're coming from. And then you've got to be the genius that can figure out how to adapt your technical issues down to terms that they can understand.
Mm-hmm.
And that's across the board, whether you're meeting with the board or with your business partner or with your end users. I can't talk to them in terms of technology because they glaze over. I can barely tell my wife's friends what I do for a living without them getting bored, you know? So we've got to be able to relate it to terms that mean something. And that's important for communication. But at the end of the day, we really just want to make an impact. You know, engineers want to make an impact. They want to make a difference. And in order to make the difference, you have to understand what the true need is.
I was going to say, you've got to understand the business objectives.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to map it back to those business objectives, right? So, they don't want to hear about features. They want to hear about the benefits.
That's right.
Of whatever it is that you're building.
You nailed it.
Well, Matt, I mean, you've led, built, scaled for some of the most complex companies in the world. You know, if you had to say, what is that something extra that you think every leader, and maybe if you want to be specific, a technology leader needs, what would you say that that would be?
You know, I think especially in technology, it's easy to get narrowly focused on the technology itself. You know, we talked about understanding, having empathy for your customer's customer and for your board and your leadership team, really understanding that. But I think it's bringing art to the table. So, you know, we've got STEM, right? Yes. And now that's kind of evolved into STEAM. And that A that was added is for art. And, you know, Apple ran some ads back in the 80s, the Think Different campaign. And I've got a whole collection of that artwork. You've seen it. It used to be in my office. Now it's in my home office. And I just loved it because the people that they brought front and center were not all technology people. In fact, most of them weren't technology people. I mean, Einstein was in there, but Jim Henson was in there, right? That guy thought different. You know, Jane Goodall thought different. And so thinking different is a key part of solving the need here. Apple did a great job with that, right? They humanized the personal computer. They humanized, you know, the iPod became like the extension of your hand, and then the iPhone, right? It's not design. I don't remember the quote exactly from Steve Jobs, but it's design is not just how it looks and feels. It's how it works. It's like, that's how it works. And so being able to bring full circle art back to the table with user experience, customer experience, has been very fulfilling for me because I love that it's really what adapts this powerful technology in a way that a human can use it. And we've all used those apps before that we get up and we're frustrated and they're clunky or slow or hard to understand. And it adds frustration to your day and it brings you down and it makes you not want to go back to it again. And we've all used those systems where it's so smooth and so easy. And oh my gosh, I love this e-commerce site because it just works so great. And that user experience is really an act of engineering.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't, this is not an invention of ours, but we refer to that as functional design. And I had a great conversation with Laura Dierberg Producis one time when we started working with them about the end user experience. And I said, I referred to our designs as, you know, you're going to love it. They're beautiful. And she's like, I don't need it to be beautiful. I need it to be functional. And I'm like, you know what? I'm never going to say the word beautiful again, because that's true. We make them functional. But at the end, when you see something that's really a sophisticated and elegant design, it's mm-hmm. functionally amazing. And it's also beautiful. You know, it has symmetry to it. It's got appropriate use of white space. So it's not overly cluttered. It's balanced, you know. And all those things really matter at the end of the day, even if only incrementally. We're building some software for Dierbergs in some of their mission critical customer facing departments, right? They get very, very busy. And the technology that they had at the time, sometimes they just revert to just writing things down on paper, right? And there's nothing easier than writing an order down on paper, but then you can't track it. You don't have reporting. You don't, you know. And it's hard to, where did that piece of paper go? It's in the folder. Well, which folder? You know, the handoff can get clunky. And so we're building a solution for that. That's going to be put the technology in the hands of these people taking orders. Well, that's fine on a Tuesday afternoon at 2:00, unless it's the Tuesday afternoon before Christmas Eve, then it's not fine, right? It's like red alert. You got 12 people deep in line. Everything's moving at the speed of light. And I said to the team, I said, listen, we need to be thinking about the UI, the UX design, the user experience of this, as if there are 12 people deep. It's the day before Christmas Eve. There's 100 people behind the counter trying to fulfill orders and whatever else. And the last thing we want is for them to throw that tablet on the floor and pick up a piece of paper and start writing again, because that's the easier, better way.
Right.
So how can we come up with a user experience that's better than scribbling something on a piece of paper that they'll want to adopt and use?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great litmus test. I thank Matt for it. And I know you guys have done amazing work. Another one of our very esteemed, we love Deerbergs. We love working with Laura and her team. Mm-hmm. Well, Matt, this has been so much fun. Thank you so much. I know that you're busy serving clients, and I just appreciate you spending some time with me on the Something Extra podcast today. And I know that your words and your wisdom, it's going to help our listeners. It's going to help them on their own journey.
I appreciate that. It's been an honor to be on, Lisa. So thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.